Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Thursday, April 25th, 2019. Coming up this hour,
Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank call off merger talks.
Bank earnings out of Europe point to a rebound.
Shares of Facebook surge on another quarter of strong growth.
And global stocks slip, the dollar strengthens and treasuries steady.
Former Vice President Biden makes it official today in his run for the White House, plus defiance from the Trump administration over congressional subpoenas. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshauer, and sports make it six wins in a row for the Yankees, a comeback win over the Angels. Mets shut out by the Phillies. First round of the NFL draft tonight. Jets pick third, Giants sixth.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. U.S. futures are little change this morning while stocks in Europe slide. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up a point. Dow futures down 15. NASDAQ futures up 12. The DAX in Germany is down a tenth of a percent. CAC in Paris down 0.2%. FTSE 100 down 0.4%. Nikkei 225 in Japan gained 0.5%. The Hang Seng in Hong Kong down 0.9%. 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 2.52%. Yield on the 2-year, 2.31%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.4% or 26 cents to $66.15 a barrel. COMEX gold little change down 60 cents to $12.78.80 an ounce. The euro at 1.1146 against the dollar. The yen at 111.87. Nathan.
Karen, we begin with M&A news, and word talks between Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank have collapsed. Bloomberg's Ewan Potts joins us live from London with the very latest. Good morning, Ewan.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank have ended their plans for a merger. Germany's two biggest banks have been in talks since mid-March, but now that's off. It was a tie-up that had faced massive opposition from unions, politicians and key shareholders. In a statement, Deutsche says integrating the two banks will be too difficult to execute. They also cited concern over restructuring costs and additional capital requirements. At the same time, Deutsche reporting first quarter revenue today at 6.4 billion euros. That came in just below the company compiled consensus. First quarter pre-tax income coming in at 290 million euros. That was a beat. Live in London, I'm Ewan Potts, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Ewan, thank you. Turning to more bank earnings out of Europe now, inflows at UBS got a boost from wealthy clients who added $22 billion of new money to the Swiss bank. CEO Sergio Ermotti spoke with Bloomberg following the results.
Market conditions and most importantly, investor sentiments changed for the good, both in absolute and also relative to last year. So we had a very strong finish of the quarter, which is now coming a little bit into April as well.
Rich Asians came to the rescue for UBS, with clients in the region accounting for almost three quarters of inflow. Shares of UBS are up 1% in Zurich.
In the UK, Barclays trading business outperformed its peers, with first quarter income falling less than expected. Revenue from fixed income, currencies and commodities rose, while equities income tumbled 20%. CEO Jess Staley.
You saw it lighten up in the U.S. in part because of the government shutdown and the SEC being offline for a period of time. But also things like Brexit, I think, have very much subdued major boardroom activity in the U.K. and across Europe. But despite that, I think we did quite well in our markets business.
And right now, shares of Barclays are down nearly 2% in London.
Elsewhere in Europe, we have word that Royal Bank of Scotland CEO Ross McEwan is resigning. McEwan says he's leaving the state-backed lender in 12 months' time. Shares of RBS are down about 1%.
In Asia today, stocks edged lower following a surprise contraction in South Korea GDP and new guidance from the Bank of Japan. Bloomberg's Juliet Sally joins us from Singapore with details. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Nathan and Karen. Well, a slowdown in investment saw South Korea's economy shrink the most since 2008. That sent the KOSPI down 0.5% in Seoul, while the won slid to its weakest level since March 2017. Elsewhere, the BOJ left its policy stimulus unchanged as expected, but adjusted its forward guidance, which saw 10-year bond futures in Japan spike. The central bank has pledged to keep rates ultra-low into 2020 and said it's considering a facility to lend ETFs it holds to investors. In Singapore, I'm Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Julia, thank you. And in China today, stocks sank the most in 6 weeks as concerns deepened about the government scaling back stimulus. The Shanghai Composite Index slumped 2.4%, taking its loss this week to 4.5%. If that holds tomorrow, it would be the worst weekly performance this year.
In Japan, profit at Nomura Holdings plunged in the fourth quarter. Japan's biggest brokerage barely posted a profit with net income of just $7.5 million.
Nokia is leading losses on Europe's Stoxx 600. The wireless equipment maker reported an unexpected quarterly loss that has shares down nearly 10%.
Bayer shares are up more than 3% in Frankfurt. The company's agriculture unit posted a 5% jump in first quarter sales on the strength of results from Monsanto. Still, legal concerns over its Roundup weed killer are piling up, with lawsuits now numbering more than 13,000.
Shares of Facebook are surging, up 7% in early trading. The company posted strong quarterly sales growth despite setting aside $3 billion for legal costs. Emily Chang has more from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
Facebook is preparing for a fine of up to $5 billion from the U.S. Federal Trade Commission over alleged privacy violations. Sales growth continues to come from Instagram and advertising in its Stories feature. It's also hoping for a boost next quarter with its new e-commerce product called Checkout. In San Francisco, I'm Emily Chang, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Right, thanks, Emily. And shares of Microsoft are gaining, too. They're up 4% in early trading. The company's cloud computing business fueled quarterly sales and profit that topped estimates.
Shares of Tesla, meanwhile, are falling after the company posted a first quarter loss that more than double the average. That was more than double the average estimate. Bloomberg's John Tucker joins us live with the details. Good morning, John.
And Karen, a record drop in deliveries combined with the company's largest ever debt payment depleted cash to the lowest level in 3 years. Tesla reporting an adjusted loss of $2.90 a share. And Chief Executive Officer Elon Musk now reopening the door to returning to the capital markets for a cash infusion after earlier saying Tesla was done losing money. And right now the pre-market shares are down 0.3%. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. S&P futures are up 2 points now. Dow futures down 4. NASDAQ futures up about 15. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news. This is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It's 5:07 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr has more on what's happening around the world. Good Thursday morning, Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Joe Biden is set to make it official today. The former vice president will be releasing a video launching his White House campaign. Bloomberg's Bob Moon reports.
He's already been aiming to lay a claim to working-class voters who helped elect Donald Trump, Biden addressing union workers in Boston last week.
Wall Street bankers and CEOs did not build America. You built America.
He is said to plan a kickoff rally in front of a union crowd Monday in Pittsburgh. It's a state where he grew up, but also a state Trump won in 2016. The president has suggested he's not worried about Biden.
I think he's only a threat to himself.
One of the biggest issues Biden's had to address so far, some women who complained he got too cozy with unwanted kisses and hugs.
I've never been disrespectful intentionally.
At 78, he'd be the oldest ever elected president. Bob Moon, Bloomberg Daybreak.
The Trump administration escalated its defiance of Congress, vowing to fight all subpoenas from Congress. President Trump's attorney, Rudy Giuliani, spoke to ABC.
I mean, you can only go so far in harassing the president without violating the Constitution. They have gone way past that line.
Former aide to New Jersey, then-Governor Chris Christie, Bridget Kelly, was sentenced to 13 months in jail for her role in Bridgegate, the 2013 shutting down of the George Washington Bridge. It was allegedly done to punish the mayor of Fort Lee, New Jersey, for failing to support Christie's re-election bid. Outside of the courthouse afterward, Kelly called out Christie and said his day will come.
Mr. Christie, you are a bully. And the days of you calling me a liar and destroying my life are over.
Kelly and co-defendant Bill Baroni were convicted in the 2016 scandal. Hold the phone on a New York congestion price break for toll payers. Governor Phil Murphy said he has a conceptual understanding with New York on a break for toll-paying drivers from New Jersey if Manhattan congestion pricing comes to pass. Murphy said the understanding from talks last week with New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was that New Jersey commuters will be treated equally at all Hudson River crossings, the Lincoln and Holland tunnels, and the GWB. However, an MTA spokesman says there is no deal on credits, exemptions, or carve-outs because the MTA will determine the tolls once the studies are completed. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:09 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stanshauer.
Nathan, when spring training began, the feeling was the Yankees had too many Major League caliber outfielders. Five of them are now on the injured list. Clint Frazier, latest to go on. Plus, Giancarlo Stanton's return's been pushed back. But they keep winning with a lineup that resembles what you'd expect to see from their minor league team in Scranton. Despite trailing the Angels 5-0, the Yanks battled back. Scored in the ninth inning and won 6-5. DJ LeMay, who drove in the go-ahead run, he had 2 hits, 3 RBIs. CC Sabathia gave up 3 home runs. He had 3 strikeouts, so needs 3 more for 3,000. Jonathan Loaisiga with 3 innings of relief for the win. The Yanks have won 6 in a row. Mets shut out for just the second time. Phillies won 6-0. The two teams are now tied for first. NBA playoffs, Houston advanced past Utah, but not so fast for Golden State, beaten by the Clippers. So that's now 3-2 Warriors going back to L.A. Another upset in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Washington led Game 7 2-0, 3-1. Back came Carolina, and in double overtime.
Wilson couldn't get his stick on the puck. Hurricanes keep it alive. Williams towards the net. Score! The Carolina Hurricanes win Game 7.
CSN the call, the Brock McGinn goal. So the Islanders, who haven't played in 10 days, finally know their opponent in Round 2. They'll host Carolina, Game 1 tomorrow in Brooklyn. Tonight in Nashville, first round of the NFL draft. The Jets, for the second straight year, have the 3rd pick. Looking for defense if they don't trade down. The Giants, who picked 2nd last year, this time go 6th and 17th. And the big question is, will they take a quarterback? With a Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stanshauer. Nathan.
And John, Tiger is coming to Asia. Masters champion Tiger Woods is adding to his international travels at the end of this year. He says he will compete in Japan for the first time in 13 years in late October at the new Zozo Championship. Tiger Woods is also the U.S. captain for the President's Cup that's going to be held at Royal Melbourne in Australia this December. This will give the 43-year-old Woods at least 2 trips halfway around the world. S&P futures up nearly 2 points. Dow futures down 7. NASDAQ futures up 14 points. This is Bloomberg. It's coming up to 5:12 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Daybreak brought to you by National Realty, NRIA, developers of high-return income-producing properties. For investor partners, see them at NRIA.net.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European shares are slipping and futures are little changed this morning as investors parsed a slew of earnings against a backdrop of global growth concerns. A dollar gauge is setting a fresh 4-month low. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. And right now, S&P futures are up about 2 points. Dow futures are down 6. NASDAQ futures are up 15. And I'm going to just fix that dollar gauge. It's set a fresh four-month high, I should have said, but the Bloomberg dollar spot index is up about 0.2% right now. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 2.52%, yield on the 2-year 2.31%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.4% or 25 cents at $66.13 a barrel, and COMEX gold, little change at $12.79.70 an ounce. The euro at 1.1144 against the dollar, the yen at 111.87. We do get earnings for more than 6 companies in the S&P 500, with Amazon headlining that list. Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger reports.
Amazon did a good job of managing expectations. Bloomberg Intelligence says the company's conservative first quarter guidance likely set the stage for a profit beat. The top line could be in line, and a beat there is not out of the question. Forecasts are for Amazon to post an adjusted profit of $7.02 a share on revenue topping $59.6 billion. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thank you. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. Former Vice President Joe Biden is set to officially throw his hat in the ring for the White House. Biden will release a video this morning announcing his run. Russian President Vladimir Putin and North Korean leader Kim Jong-un say they have had fruitful talks about how to defuse a standoff over Pyongyang's nuclear program. The leaders spoke after their one-on-one meeting. In baseball, the Yankees won. The Mets lost along with the Nationals. The Red Sox won along with the Orioles, A's, and Giants. In the NHL playoffs, the Capitals fought hard, but they are out of the playoffs after losing a Game 7 double overtime thriller against the Hurricanes 4-3. Carolina now faces the Islanders on Friday. The Bruins play the Blue Jackets in game one of their series tonight. NBA playoffs, the Warriors lost to the Clippers last night, but still lead the series 3-2. Tonight is the first round of the NFL draft in Nashville. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries, I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thank you, Michael. 520 on Wall Street, live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. And our guest this morning, Drew Mattis, Chief Market Strategist at MetLife Investment Management. Thanks for being with us, Drew, as we sort of wrap our heads around these earnings. More than about 80% of the S&P 500 have now reported. The earnings seem strong. Markets are kind of meandering this morning. How do you read this?
Well, you know, I think we're heading into a period where we're going to get some news that's going to, you know, maybe make things look a little bad. So next week we're going to get Q1 GDP. Most people expect that'll be weaker than kind of the trend has been. People are concerned about the tax returns and how much people are paying in versus the refunds going out, and they're worrying about what that means for the consumer. So the earnings are good news, but they're old news, right, because they've already happened. And so people are trying to divine what the future holds. And while the historical data is really nice, they're worried what the future data might look like.
Well, let's take a look at some of that historical data, because when you talk about the strength of the consumer, it seems like the data that have come in thus far have shown some resilience on the consumer side. You don't see that continuing into the second quarter?
We do, but I think that there is a cohort of people out there who are looking at the tax data and seeing a lot of negatives. We're looking at the same data, and we think it looks okay. And so this is where, you know, there's a increasing divergence, I would say, in terms of people who are thinking to themselves that maybe this idea of a recession and the yield curve inversion, all meaning that we have to worry about, you know, the next year or so, maybe that was overdone. And I think some people are going to be giving up on that idea that there's a recession in the near term. But not everyone's done it yet. And I think that's some of the reason why, you know, people are afraid to get too optimistic about the economy because we're in the 10th year of the expansion, and they don't want to look like an idiot if a recession hits. But, you know, maybe it's time to be idiots.
So what data do you think that the Fed specifically is going to be looking at as it, you know, charts its decision making over the next few months and decides, you know, whether to, you know, what move to make on rates?
I mean, to be honest, I think the only thing they're looking at right now is inflation. The growth numbers are probably not going to change. If they do anything, they're going to surprise to the Fed's forecast on the upside. So they don't really, I think, have to worry about the economic outlook all that much. They really just need to keep an eye on inflation because they've stopped hiking rates in the way that they've been going. And that means that they need to be on guard for some sort of inflation pickup that would mean that they need to restart. Which I continue to believe is the most likely option, is that the next rate move is higher, not lower, even though, you know, pausing for a length of time during an economic tightening cycle or during a tightening cycle in an economic expansion is somewhat unusual.
Do you see any signs of inflation in the near term?
There could be some with the payroll report. I know people like to believe the link between wages and inflation is dead. I think just around the time you start thinking that link reemerges. It's a bit like one of those horror movie villains that just kind of, every time you think they're dead, they come back. So I think you want to be careful there. And I think the Fed's going to be watching the employment report as well to see what those wages are doing. Now, on the flip side of it, I think that they're probably going to, those higher wages could be met with higher productivity. And if that's the case, rather than being a sign that things are getting worse, it's a sign that things are actually going to be doing quite well.
In our last 30 seconds here, how crucial do you think this job report coming out next week is going to be in terms of the Fed rate path?
One report usually doesn't matter all that much. So I'm going to say, you know, the actual single month worth of data is not important. But if it keeps showing that the trend is intact, I think it'll end up being one of those things we look back on and say, you know what, we should have known what the Fed was going to do.
Drew Mattis, Chief Market Strategist, MetLife Investment Management. Always good to talk with you. Thanks for being here with us on Bloomberg Daybreak. And taking a look at the markets this morning, they're rather flat. S&P futures up just a point. Dow futures down 15. NASDAQ futures up 12 points. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's coming up to 5:25 on Wall Street. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio, streaming live 24 hours a day on the Bloomberg Business app, radio.com, the iHeartRadio app, and Bloomberg.com. Good morning.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We are just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. Talks between Commerzbank and Deutsche Bank are over. The German lenders concluded that a combination would not create sufficient benefits to offset execution risks, restructuring costs, and capital requirements associated with such a large-scale integration. Shares of Deutsche Bank are up 4%, while Commerzbank is down 2%.
In other European banking news, inflows at UBS were boosted by wealthy clients who added $22 billion of new money to the Swiss bank. CEO Sergio Ermotti says a boost in investor sentiment helped improve results.
We saw volumes coming back and conviction coming back on the IB side and people taking a little bit more risk on their asset allocation.
UBS shares are up 1% this morning.
Barclays shares down nearly 2%. Analysts say first quarter results were a mixed bag, with its overall revenue hit by a weak performance in its UK business.
Royal Bank of Scotland Group is looking for a new CEO. Ross McEwan will leave the state-backed lender within a year. Shares are down 1.25%.
In the U.S., we get earnings from more than five dozen companies in the S&P 500, headlining that list Amazon, Intel, and Ford.
Shares of Facebook are up more than 8%. The social media company posted robust quarterly sales growth and signaled it may be close to resolving a U.S. privacy investigation.
Microsoft shares are up 4% to a record high. The company's cloud computing business fueled quarterly sales and profit that topped estimates.
Shares of Tesla are down in early trading after the electric car maker posted a bigger than projected loss for the first quarter. Bloomberg's John Tucker has that live. John.
Yeah, Nathan, Tesla reported an adjusted loss of $2.90 a share for the first quarter, missing analyst average estimates for a loss of $1.30. The CEO, Elon Musk, also reset expectations for future cash flow after earlier saying the company was done losing money. Musk is also raising the possibility Tesla may have to return to the capital markets to raise cash. John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. S&P futures are little changed this morning. Dow futures down 17, NASDAQ futures up about 12. The DAX in Germany is little changed. CAC in Paris down 0.1%, and the FTSE 100 is down 0.3%. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 2.52%, and the yield on the 2-year 2.31%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.4% or 27 cents to $66.16 a barrel, and COMEX gold is little changed at $12.79.50. Announce. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
All right, thanks, Karen. It's 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr has more on what's happening around the world. Michael.
Thank you very much, Nathan. Former Vice President Joe Biden will officially enter the 2020 race for the White House this morning. Biden will make his announcement in a video. Biden, if he wins the White House, would be 78 years old, the oldest ever elected president. President Trump's attorney says the Democrats can only go so far in harassing the president without violating the Constitution.
Two FBI investigations, one 7 months, the other one 17 months, that came to the conclusion, no collusion, and we can't conclude that he committed obstruction of justice.
Rudy Giuliani's comments to ABC come as the Trump administration escalated its defiance of Congress, vowing to fight all subpoenas. Another Trump administration official is declining to appear for a closed hearing, with the Democratic-led House committee potentially risking contempt charges. John Gore, Deputy Assistant Attorney General for the Department of Justice's Civil Rights Division, will not appear for a deposition before the Oversight and Government Reform Committee about citizenship questions on the census. President Trump is said to have backed a Libya strongman's attack on Tripoli. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
The president indicated in a phone call with Libyan strongman Khalifa Haftar last week, according to Bloomberg sources, that the U.S. supported an assault on the country's capital to depose its United Nations-backed government. In an earlier call from the White House National Security Advisor John Bolton, according to three diplomats, also left Haftar with the impression of a U.S. green light for an offensive on Tripoli by his forces known as the Libyan National Army. The White House has issued a statement that said Trump discussed ongoing counterterrorism efforts and recognized Field Marshal Haftar's significant role in fighting terrorism and in securing Libya's oil resources. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy says the state and New York Governor Andrew Cuomo have a preliminary deal where drivers will get a break on tolls from Jersey toward Manhattan congestion pricing at the three Hudson River crossings. Murphy originally was critical of the congestion toll, saying it was a double tax on Jersey commuters. However, the MTA says there is no deal on credits exemptions or carve-outs because the MTA will determine the tolls once the studies are completed. Global News, 24 hours a day, on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
Thanks, Michael. 5:35 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update. Here's John Stasher.
Nathan, somehow, despite all the injuries, the Yankees keep winning. A night where they didn't get a hit until the fifth inning, didn't score until the sixth when they trailed 5-0. They tied the game in the seventh, scoring three runs and only one hit. And then in the ninth, with two outs and no one on, Tyler Wade singled, stole second, and scored on a DJ LeMahieu hit. Yanks made it six wins in a row, 6-5 over the Angels. Jonathan Loaisiga, with three innings of relief, got the win. Just as Gary Sanchez came off the injured list, Clint Frazier went on. So still 14 players on the IL, including five outfielders. Met bats were quiet, only six singles and a 6-0 loss to the Phillies, who are back tied for first with the Mets. Much anticipated second round NBA playoff series between Golden State and Houston, with the Warriors upset by the Clippers, 129-121, so the series is 3-2 going back to LA. The Rockets did finish off Utah. The first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs are over. They could not have been more unpredictable. The two top seeds are gone. The two teams who've won the last three Stanley Cups are gone. Carolina in its first playoff in a decade, one game seven in Washington, 4-3 in double overtime, so it's the Hurricanes that will face the Islanders. Game one tomorrow in Brooklyn. First round of the NFL draft tonight in Nashville. A giant question: will they take a quarterback to at some point replace the aging Eli Manning? GM Dave Gettleman could have taken a QB last year and didn't.
We couldn't pass up on Saquon. He was the best player in the draft. You can't do that. Listen, we've had this conversation before. You know, Eli's closer to 40 than he is to 25. I think we can all do the math. You know, 40 take away 38. We can do that. But at the end of the day, we're going to take the best players.
They pick 6th and again 17th. The Jets have the 3rd pick. With the Bloomberg NBC Sports Update, I'm John Stashower. Nathan?
Thank you, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street, and the latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is on newsstands now. The cover is on the new era of low inflation. Also in the issue, the man who is looking to revolutionize the hearing aid. Josh Dean wrote the story for Bloomberg Business Week.
He claims that the future of the hearing aid was not a hearing aid. It was a communications device. And he thought, well, if it's in your ear, you should be able to get all kinds of medical data from it. And what if you could translate languages?
You can read more about this and other stories in this week's edition of Bloomberg Business Week. Know what matters and why. Visit businessweek.com or pick up a copy of the magazine on newsstands now. And you can hear Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly weekdays at 2 p.m. Wall Street time on Bloomberg Radio. 5:38 on Wall Street, time for the Tri-State Business Report from Bloomberg's Ed Corey. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, Nathan. Sources tell Bloomberg Macy's has been talking with New York City officials about building a skyscraper on top of its flagship store in Herald Square. The company's floated plans for a 1.2 million square foot office tower that would be used by other tenants. Luxury vacation homes are losing their luster in the Hamptons. There were 869 high-end properties available at the end of the first quarter. That's the most in 7 years, according to appraiser Miller Samuel and Douglas Elliman Real Estate. Buyers chose deals under $1 million. Consolidated Edison has a plan to solve a natural gas shortage in Westchester County. but it's going to take more than 4 years to carry out. Kinder Morgan wants to upgrade compression facilities on its Tennessee gas pipeline. That would let it deliver more gas to the wealthy suburb. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey. Nathan?
Thank you, Ed. 5:39 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Steve Podisk, and on KYW in Philadelphia, we are looking at quarterly results from Comcast.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on WHAS in Louisville. Tyson sold its stake in Beyond Meat ahead of the plant protein maker's IPO.
I'm Anna Edwards on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're following the decision by British antitrust regulators to block Sainsbury's Asda takeover.
I'm Andrew O'Day on 1010 Winds in New York. I'm reporting on the growing pileup of unsold luxury homes in the Hamptons.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Ford reports after the close. It's expected to come out with another quarter of uninspiring results.
Those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Another story we're following for you, Carlos Ghosn hopes to get out of jail a second time. His lawyers posted a $4.5 million bond to secure his release from a Tokyo prison. The former Nissan chairman is fighting charges that he funneled millions of dollars through an intermediary for his own purposes. Prosecutors are arguing Ghosn should not be released. S&P futures little change to higher, up nearly a point. Dow futures down 18 points. NASDAQ futures up 11 points. 10-year Treasury yield 2.52%. 2-year Treasuries 2.31%. You are listening to Bloomberg Daybreak. It's coming up to 5:41 on Wall Street. Straight ahead, we check in with Bloomberg Opinion on the breaking news that Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank merger talks have collapsed. Stay with us for that and more on Bloomberg Radio. Good morning.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and TikTok on Twitter. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. European shares are slipping this morning. Futures are little change as investors parsed a slew of earnings against a backdrop of global growth concerns. A dollar gauge is setting a fresh four-month high. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures are little change. Dow futures down 21. NASDAQ futures up 9. The DAX in Germany is little change now as well. 10-year Treasury down 2/32. Yield 2.52%. Yield on the 2-year 2.31%. NYMEX crude oil up 0.4% or 29 cents to $66.18 a barrel. COMEX gold little change down 60 cents to $12.78.80 an ounce. The euro at 1.1132 against the dollar. The yen at 111.89. We get earnings from more than five dozen companies in the S&P 500 today. Amazon headlining that list. And we'll also get a look at the weekly report and initial jobless claims at 8:30 Wall Street time, along with durable goods orders. And the Bloomberg Consumer Comfort Index is out at 9:45. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, former Vice President Joe Biden will officially enter the race for the White House this morning. Biden would be the oldest president elected if he wins at age 78. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un and Russian President Vladimir Putin have finished their talks at today's summit in Vladivostok. They discussed developing bilateral relations. In baseball, the Yankees won. The Mets lost along with the Nationals. The Red Sox won, along with the Orioles, A's, and Giants. In the NHL playoffs, the Capitals lost a Game 7 double overtime thriller against the Hurricanes 4-3. Carolina now faces the Islanders on Friday. The Bruins play the Blue Jackets in Game 1 of their series tonight. In the NBA playoffs, the Warriors lost to the Clippers last night, but still lead the series 3-2. Tonight is the first round of the NFL draft in Nashville. The Cardinals have the overall first pick. The Jets are third. The Giants are sixth and also 17th. Global News 24 hours a day on air and at TikTok on Twitter. Powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg, Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, where it's 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, our platform offering informed perspectives on a range of global topics and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news. Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan joins us from our London bureau, starting with the breaking news this morning. Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank ending their merger talks. Chris Hughes and Elisa Martinuzzi, though, have merged on peace on this breaking news. What's their take on it?
Well, you know, the headline I love on this is that Deutsche Bank has gone back to a cold, dark place. And what they really have started out looking at is the logic of the transaction as being its main obstacle. So the idea was you fuse two domestic lenders, get considerable savings, and then, look, you also get to create capital because you crystallize a Commerzbank valuation at a considerable discount to its book value. But the author's take is that while this could have improved the merged company's earnings power in 5 years' time, the operation might well have killed the patient in the meantime, because you've got to integrate two incredibly complex financial institutions, and as well the regulator, the European Central Bank, would have been made extremely nervous by the whole affair.
All right, so let's see where this leaves the patients then. What about Deutsche Bank?
Well, Deutsche Bank will probably need to get to the next stage of its restructuring on its own, and it's got to revert to its standalone strategy. And this, the authors say, is going to be a pretty long slog. The bank is an enduring cost problem. Cutting back its equities operation and its U.S. activities to create a business more focused on Europe might be a start. But that could be expensive and could require even more capital from investors who have already had their share of reboots of the bank over the past few years.
And as for Commerzbank, I mean, does it go looking for more merger partners now?
Indeed it will, because the option of a deal with another European bank may become more likely. There's, of course, a few that have already become knocking. And the question really is who is going to be the best parent, both strategically and politically. I mean, the rumored interest in a foreign buyer was probably one of the factors pushing the merger together in the first place. But now who are the likely candidates? We can look at BNP Paribas, UniCredit, ING. The CEO has said that doing nothing isn't an option. So you're right that this is going to be something that we're going to be having to watch in the future. But the thing you want to look at is, you know, what's investors' overall take here? And the share performance this morning really tells the whole story. Commerzbank is 16% above its level on February 6th, which is before the speculation of a Deutsche Bank tie-up really kicked off. And the DAX has risen since then, but Commerzbank is up twice as much. Now look at Deutsche Bank. Its shares are back where they were in early February, and it's underperformed the DAX. And Deutsche seems more likely to be issuing equity than getting a bid.
All right, let's move on to the latest piece from Therese Raphael on Brexit, though specifically, this is more of a look at Nigel Farage. For those who aren't familiar with this particular figure in British politics, who is Nigel Farage?
He is absolutely a household name over here. He was the former head of the anti-immigrant UK Independence Party. Americans might remember him as the first foreign politician to win an audience with Donald Trump after the 2016 election. But now he's the head of the brand new Brexit Party, and it's his longer game that should really be a worry for Theresa May's Conservative Party.
And why is that?
Well, even though, you know, you could read it as nothing more than a vehicle for capturing the protest vote, Farage is really ever attuned to the political mood and could see it as a way of realigning British politics. If he's right, he's either going to force the Tories to go where he wants them to go, or he's going to formalize the schism between the party's pro and anti-Brexit wings.
But at this point, I mean, is the Brexit Party more than just the party of Nigel Farage?
Well, no, because you underestimate the way these smaller parties work at your peril. I mean, one key test here is going to be the European parliamentary elections, which are on May 23rd. It's looking increasingly likely that Britain is going to have to participate. And Farage's party could be expected to win the largest share of disgruntled conservative pro-Brexit voters. It could reach as high as 30%. So, you know, even though British voters normally ignore our European parliamentary elections, this one is going to get a lot of focus. Because ultimately, the stakes are a lot bigger. The 2016 referendum was naively assumed to be the end of Farage's single-issue political career. But what it did was really bring him into the mainstream of British politics. And now he poses the same threat to the Conservative Party as he did back then. If May can't pass her Brexit deal, eventually a successor will have to decide whether the Tories will effectively subsume the Brexit Party or divide trying.
Thanks as always, Bloomberg Opinion editor Jennifer Ryan. You can read more on these and other stories from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN Go on the Bloomberg Terminal, Karen.
Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. It's brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute resolved faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning with Steve Podisk in the Bloomberg 99.1 Washington Newsroom.
Kerry Green Mountain must face most of a consolidated antitrust lawsuit accusing the K-Cup maker of monopolizing the market for single-serve coffee machines and pods. Colorado could legalize sports betting under a bill approved by the state house. The measure would provide a master license to Colorado casinos that could then contract with brick-and-mortar and internet operators. And a new international medical diagnosis and procedure coding system is up for a vote by the World Health Organization's World Health Assembly. If approved, it could bring U.S. healthcare coding into the digital age.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
All right, thanks, Steve. Now another legal story we're watching this morning. The Supreme Court has accepted a case to decide whether federal law bars employers from discriminating against gay and transgender people. For more on the case, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to Cornell law professor Michael Dorf.
Michael, this is about interpreting the Civil Rights Act of 1964. What's the basic question in all three cases that the court will consider?
Whether the language in Title VII, which is the provision of that act that governs employment discrimination, that forbids sex discrimination, encompasses discrimination based on sexual orientation in two of the cases and gender identity in the third case.
Federal appellate courts across the country have considered the issue. How have they come out?
So for a long time, the courts said that sex discrimination does not include sexual orientation or gender identity discrimination, but the trend in recent years has been in the other direction, partly, I think, in response to the broader acceptance of equal rights for LGBT individuals, and partly in response to the U.S. Equal Employment Opportunity Commission's own determination to treat those forms of discrimination as covered by the sex discrimination prohibition.
So the issue of sex extending to sexual orientation wasn't part of the conversation in 1964 when the Civil Rights Act was passed. Does that mean that textualists on the court will find that the law doesn't cover sexual orientation?
No, I think on the contrary, there's a very good argument based, strictly speaking, on the text that the intentions of the lawmakers that were not expressed in the text don't matter. There is a very important case from the late 1990s involving sexual harassment in which Justice Scalia, writing for the court, said, we're governed by the language of our laws, not the intentions of our lawmakers. And here that language is discrimination based on sex. The most straightforward argument is, if you're firing somebody because of the sex of their partner, and if the person you're firing would not be fired had been a man rather than a woman, therefore it had been an opposite sexual relationship, well, that's discrimination based on sex, right? That's the nature of sexual orientation discrimination, the same thing with gender identity, where you're enforcing sex stereotypes.
And that's Cornell law professor Michael Dorf speaking to Bloomberg's June Grasso. You can listen to more legal analysis like this on Bloomberg Politics, Policy, Power, and Law, weekdays at 12 p.m. Wall Street time here on Bloomberg Radio. And find more legal news at BloombergLaw.com. Attorneys will find exceptional legal research and business development tools there as well. Visit BloombergLaw.com for more information. This is Bloomberg.